Hello, welcome to Science TLDR, where we distill complex scientific research into impactful insights for you, our discerning listener. Today we're digging into a really fascinating paper published in Nature. It's titled, Cancer-Induced Nerve Injury Promotes Resistance to Anti-PD-1 Therapy by Baruch and colleagues. And this deep dive, it really challenges some fundamental assumptions we hold about cancer biology. You know, it's such a critical challenge in modern oncology. We've seen these groundbreaking successes with immunotherapies like anti-PD-1, but while a significant number of patients just don't respond, or worse, they develop resistance over time. And that's not just a small thing, right? It's a major hurdle for actually personalizing cancer treatment effectively.
Absolutely. And for a long time, we've thought about tumors as these intricate ecosystems, the tumor microenvironment, you know, the complex mix of cancer cells, immune cells, blood vessels, structural bits. But what's often been sort of overlooked or maybe considered secondary is the role of the nervous system in all this. Nerves were mostly seen as, well, passive pathways or maybe silent partners just helping the tumor grow a bit.
And this paper just completely shifts that perspective, doesn't it? It asks this really profound question. What if the way cancer interacts with nerves, specifically by injuring them, directly impacts how well immunotherapy works? What if nerves aren't just bystanders at all? What if they're active players, kind of orchestrating the tumor's response or its resistance to treatment?
Yeah, and what's particularly compelling, even in their initial findings, is this idea that the nerve injury itself generates a specific inflammatory signal. And, well, quite unexpectedly, this signal doesn't help the body fight the tumor. It actually helps the tumor resist the immune attack. It's a real twist. It adds this whole new layer to how we understand immune oncology.
Okay, let's unpack this a bit more. For our listeners who are definitely knowledgeable in oncology but might appreciate a quick primer, can you just remind us briefly how anti-PD-1 therapy actually works, its mechanism?
Sure. So anti-PD-1 antibodies are, you know, a cornerstone of immune checkpoint blockade. They basically work by blocking the PD-1-PD-L1 pathway. Think of PD-1-PD-L1 like an immune break. PD-1 is on the T cells, our immune fighters. PD-L1 is often on cancer cells or other cells nearby. When they connect, PD-1 hits the brakes on the T cell, stops the attack. So the anti-PD-1 antibody blocks that connection. It releases the brake. And that lets the T cells recognize and destroy the cancer cells.
Right, releasing the brake. Got it. So the paper immediately links this immunotherapy concept to something clinicians often see, paraneural invasion or PNI. What exactly is PNI and why has it been such a red flag?
PNI is basically when tumor cells infiltrate directly into peripheral nerve fibers. We sometimes call these tumor-associated nerves or TANs. And it's a really well-established negative prognostic factor in many aggressive cancers. You see it in cutaneous squamous cell carcinoma, melanoma, gastric, pancreatic cancer. When you see PNI, it usually means a poorer prognosis, higher recurrence, lower survival. But why? Why did PNI correlate with worse outcomes, especially in the context of immunotherapy resistance? That mechanism was largely, well, a black box before this study. It was a clear clinical pattern, but the underlying biology was pretty elusive.
Okay, and here's where this paper starts connecting those dots. The researchers first looked at patient data, didn't they, to see if PNI really did link up with immunotherapy response. What did they find there?
They found a really striking association. In patients with cutaneous squamous cell carcinoma, or CSCC, those who didn't respond to anti-PD-1 therapy, they had a significantly higher incidence of PNI at baseline. We're talking 50% PNI in non-responders versus only 15% responders.
Wow, 50 versus 15, that's a big difference.
It is. It immediately suggested PNI isn't just a sign of aggressive cancer, but maybe, just maybe, a direct driver of resistance to the therapy.
And they didn't just stop at looking at the tumor structure, right? They went deeper, looking for molecular signs of actual nerve damage. What kind of markers were they looking for?
Exactly. They used multiplex immunofluorescence, a technique to see multiple proteins at once in the tissue. They quantified neuronal injury markers, specifically ATF3 and JUN. Think of ATF3 as a kind of stress response gene in neurons. When ATF3 goes up, it means the nerve is injured, under duress, maybe trying to repair itself. And non-responders showed significantly higher levels of ATF3 in their neurons.
Okay.
So that's solid evidence of ongoing neuronal injury right there in the tumor microenvironment. It moves beyond just seeing tumor cells near nerves to seeing the nerves themselves being actively damaged.
And to really nail this down, to show it wasn't just a CSCC thing, they used a broader gene signature too, to show it might apply more widely.
That's right. There's an independently established gene signature that's known to be associated with PNI and nerve injury. They found the signature was significantly enriched in the pre-treatment Tucker samples of anti-PD-1 non-responders. And importantly, this was across multiple cancer types: CSCC, melanoma, and gastric cancer. That's crucial because it points towards a potential tumor-agnostic effect, meaning this mechanism, this nerve injury driving resistance, might be a general phenomenon, not just limited to one cancer type.
Okay, so the clinical link is there, the molecular evidence for nerve injury is there. Now, the million-dollar question, how are the cancer cells doing this? The paper outlines, what, three key mechanisms? Let's start with the first one, this sort of direct physical attack.
Right, the first mechanism they identify points to direct myelin degradation. It's like a physical assault on the nerve's structure. They used in vitro co-cultures. So they grew human neurons in a dish alongside cancer cells. And they observed the cancer cells making direct contact and actually invading the axons within just 72 hours.
72 hours. That's incredibly fast.
It is. And the electron microscopy images they got were just stark.
What did those show?
They showed these profound changes at the ultrastructural level. In cancer-exposed neurons, you could clearly see the myelin sheath breaking down. Myelin, you know, is that fatty insulating layer around nerve axons. It's critical for fast signal transmission.
Like insulation on a wire.
Exactly like that.
Yeah.
And the images showed this myelin just falling apart, forming these large, weird, circular blobs, totally different from its normal, neat structure.
Yeah.
And right where the cancer cell touched the nerve, complete loss of myelin, even signs of the axon itself degenerating. And importantly, they looked for synapses, you know, the junctions for nerve signaling.
Yeah.
They didn't see any, which confirms this wasn't some kind of signaling interaction. It was direct physical damage.
So cancer cells are literally stripping the insulation off the nerve wires, disrupting the signal, leaving the nerve damaged. Did they show this had a functional consequence in living models?
Yes, they did. They performed electrical conduction studies in mice, and they found significantly lower electrical activity, weaker compound action potentials in the skin where tumors were growing compared to normal skin.
So the nerve signals were actually weaker.
Definitely impaired nerve conduction. And then they tied it back to patients. In treatment-naive CSCC patients, they found a really strong correlation. The density of injured nerves marked by that ATF3 protein directly correlated with the density of degraded myelin markers.
Ah, connecting the dots.
Exactly. It firmly links the structural damage they saw under the microscope to the functional impairment in the mice, and critically, back to the injury markers in human patients.
Okay, that's really compelling for the physical damage part.
Right.
But how does this injured nerve then mess up the immune response? What's mechanism two, this idea of neuron-driven inflammation?
Right, this is where it gets even more interesting, maybe a bit counterintuitive. They used human iPS cell-derived neurons, basically human nerve cells grown in the lab from stem cells. They co-cultured these with CSCC cells. First, they confirmed, yes, the cancer exposure caused the neurons to upregulate ATF3, the injury marker.
Okay, injury confirmed.
But then they did RNA sequencing on these injured neurons, looked at all the genes being turned on or off, and they saw this dramatic activation of immune-related pathways, things like TNF signaling, interferon alpha, and gamma signaling, and really importantly, IL-6 signaling.
And the crucial point here, I think, was who was making these inflammatory signals. It wasn't the cancer cells.
Exactly. That's a pivotal finding. They used an immunoassay called Luminex to measure secreted proteins.
Yeah.
And they found that IL-6 specifically was highly secreted by the neurons after they were exposed to cancer cells. It wasn't coming from the cancer cells themselves.
Wow.
So the neurons aren't just passive victims here. They're actively initiating an inflammatory response. They're becoming these unexpected signaling hubs in the tumor microenvironment.
Okay, but this raises a question. You mentioned interferon signaling, type I interferon specifically. Isn't that usually considered, well, good for fighting tumors, anti-tumor immunity? So why is it implicated here in resistance? Seems paradoxical.
That's a great point. And it really highlights a critical nuance in immunology. Think about type I interferon, maybe like adrenaline.
Okay.
A short, sharp burst of adrenaline, acute response can be super helpful, right?
Yeah.
Get you ready for fight or flight. That's like acute IFNI boosting anti-tumor immunity. But what if you're constantly stressed, pumping adrenaline for weeks? Chronic stress, that starts to wear you down,
yeah.
Suppress other systems.
Okay, burnout.
Exactly. The study suggests that this chronic type I IFN signaling triggered by the ongoing nerve injury actually flips sides. It leads to immunosuppression. It helps create immunotherapy resistance. It's like a negative feedback loop that exhausts the sustained immune response over time.
So the injured nerve is like sending out a distress flare. But instead of calling in the cavalry, the tumor-killing T cells, it's accidentally attracting the wrong crowd. Cells that either build defenses around the tumor or actively shut down the immune attack, that's quite insidious.
It is. It's a sophisticated way the tumor seems to be co-opting a normal injury response for its own benefit.
And how does this then connect to the third mechanism, the broader remodeling of the tumor microenvironment and this idea of immune exhaustion?
Right. So as a tumor keeps invading nerves and this chronic nerve-driven inflammation continues, it starts to skew the whole neighborhood, the entire tumor microenvironment. In their mouse models, they watch this over time. As nerve invasion increased, so did the number of immunosuppressive macrophages filtering to the tumor. These are macrophages marked with things like CD68, CD163, and PD-L1. They actively suppress immune responses. And alongside them, they saw more exhausted CD8 plus T cells marked by TIM3 and other exhaustion markers. These T cells are physically there, but they've lost their punch. They can't effectively kill the tumor cells anymore.
And this isn't just happening right next to the nerve. It spreads out.
Exactly. They use this really cool technique, COSMX spatial transcriptomics. It lets you see which genes are active in which cells and precisely where they're located within the tumor slice, like a molecular map.
Very high res.
Very. And in pancreatic cancer patients, they saw that injured nerves had way more of these suppressive CD163 plus macrophages and exhausted LEG3 plus T cells right in their immediate vicinity, the perineural niche, compared to healthy nerves. But even more broadly in the CSCC patients, the spatial data showed a clear link between the nerve injury areas and this immunosuppressive inflammation extending out into the general tumor environment.
So the local fire spreads.
Yeah, it suggests the local nerve injury can really skew the overall immune mood of the entire tumor. They also found increased markers associated with neurodegeneration, like PARK-K7 and PNK1, in these non-responder nerve niches.
So, bottom line, what does this all mean for the T cells? The very cells we're trying to boost with anti-PD-1 therapy?
Well, in the non-responders, when they looked at the overall gene activity in the tumors using bulk RNA-seq, they saw upregulation of immunosuppressive pathways. Things like IL-10 production, wound healing programs, stuff that tells the immune system to calm down. Responders, on the other hand, showed the expected signs. T-cell activation, pathways that negatively regulate IL-6. And another key thing, non-responders had significantly higher overall PD-1 expression on their immune cells.
Even though they're getting anti-PD-1 therapy.
Right. It suggests their T-cells are functionally impaired, maybe even more deeply exhausted, despite being present. The nerve-driven suppression is just overwhelming the effect of the anti-PD-1 drug. The T-cells are there, but they're being told very strongly to stand down.
Okay, this whole picture is incredibly intricate. Nerve injury leads to bad inflammation, which suppresses T cells and blocks the therapy. But the real test, always, is can you reverse it? If you understand the mechanism, can you intervene? What did they try?
They tried several things, aiming at different points in this pathway. First, they went right for the source, the nerves themselves. In a mouse model with a working immune system, they did surgical denervation. They physically removed the nerves from the tumor area.
Yeah.
And that significantly enhanced the effect of anti-PD-1 therapy compared to control mice. Tumors shrank more.
Wow. Direct proof.
It's powerful proof of concept, right? Mm-hmm. Removing the nerves removes the resistance signal.
And they did that clever mirror image experiment too, didn't they? To really hammer the point home.
They did. Conversely, they performed surgical exotomy. Here, they cut the nerves but left them in place near the tumor. This causes a specific type of nerve degeneration called Wallerian degeneration, which mimics the injury state.
So inducing injury on purpose.
Exactly. And in these mice, anti-PD-1 therapy worked worse. Tumor control was significantly poorer compared to controls.
Okay, that seals it.
It's a really strong validation. Nerve injury causes resistance. Removing nerves removes resistance. Causing nerve injury worsens resistance. It fits together beautifully.
Beyond actually cutting nerves, which might not be feasible clinically, could they target the signals coming from the injured neuron, like that ATF3 gene you mentioned?
Yes, absolutely. They used genetic tools. They created a conditional knockout mouse where they could specifically delete the ATF3 gene just in nociceptor neurons, the pain-sensing nerves often involved here. In these mice, lacking ATF3 in their neurons, melanoma tumors actually grew slower, even without any immunotherapy.
Interesting. Just blocking the injury signal slowed the cancer.
It seems so.
And what happened to the immune cells in those tumors when ATF3 was knocked out?
They saw a beneficial shift. There was increased infiltration of IFN gamma-producing CD8 plus T cells.
Yeah.
Those are the potent anti-tumor T cells we want. They also saw a shift towards M1-like macrophages, the good guy anti-tumor macrophages. And concurrently, T cell exhaustion markers like LAG3 were reduced.
So less exhaustion, more active T cell.
Exactly. It's strong evidence that the specific signaling through ATF3 in the neuron is directly driving the immune suppression they observed.
Okay, so blocking the initial injury signal works. What about blocking the downstream inflammatory molecules that the injured nerves release, the IFNI and the IL-6?
They tackled both. For the type interferon pathway, they used mice where the receptor for IFN-alpha, called IFNAR1, was knocked out. So cells couldn't hear that chronic IFNI signal anymore. They did this in their demyelinated mouse models, which mimic the nerve injury state. And blocking the IFNI receptor significantly improved how well anti-PD-1 worked compared to the demyelinated mice with intact IFNI signaling.
Confirming that chronic IFNI is indeed part of the resistance mechanism.
Yes, it highlights it as a key mediator when it becomes chronic.
And what about IL-6? Did blocking that help?
It did, and quite specifically. They combined anti-PD-1 therapy with an antibody that blocks the IL-6 receptor. In the demyelinated mice, the ones with nerve injury, this combination significantly reduced tumor viability. The tumor suffered. But importantly, in mice without demyelination, adding the anti-IL-6 antibody didn't really do much on top of anti-PD-1.
Ah, so the IL-6 effect is really tied to the nerve injury state.
Precisely. It pinpoints IL-6 as a crucial factor, specifically driven by the CNI, the cancer-induced nerve injury contributing to resistance. It's not just general inflammation. It's linked to this specific nerve damage pathway.
This is really groundbreaking stuff. It feels like it opens up completely new ways of thinking. So stepping back, what are the broader implications here? Where might this lead?
Well, first, it fundamentally shifts how we should view the nervous system in cancer. It's not just passively supporting growth anymore. It's actively regulating anti-tumor immunity and critically influencing how patients respond to immunotherapy. This neuroimmune axis becomes a central dynamic player we have to consider.
And clinically, thinking practically, this could offer new tools, couldn't it, for identifying patients maybe?
Absolutely. That PNI nerve injury gene signature they validated, or maybe measuring ATF3 levels in neurons, or degraded myelin proteins in biopsies, these could potentially become crucial biomarkers. They could help us identify upfront which patients are at higher risk of not responding to anti-PD-1 because of this nerve injury mechanism.
Allowing for more tailored treatment.
Exactly. Maybe those patients need a combination therapy from the start, something targeting this pathway alongside the anti-PD-1. It's a big step towards more precise, personalized oncology.
So we're not just understanding a resistance mechanism. We might actually be uncovering entirely new therapeutic targets.
That's the really exciting part. The study points to several novel avenues. Can we develop drugs that target the neuronal injury signaling itself, maybe inhibiting ATF3 or related pathways? Or can we more effectively block the downstream consequences, the chronic IFNI signaling or the IL-6 pathway, specifically in patients with evidence of CNA? This could potentially reverse resistance, make existing immunotherapies work better, especially for cancers that are known to be neurotropic, cancers that really like to involve nerves.
It also really hammers home the complexity, doesn't it? The tumor microenvironment is just incredibly intricate. And the whole acute versus chronic inflammation thing, it's a great reminder that biology is rarely black and white. Context is absolutely everything. Makes you really think critically about these pathways.
Indeed. It shows how tumors can cleverly subvert normal physiological processes, like injury responses, for their own survival and resistance.
Okay, as we wrap up this fascinating deep dive, let's try to boil it down. What are the three major takeaways from the results section that you, our listener, should really hold on to?
Okay, takeaway number one. Cancer cells can directly injure nerves. They do this, in part, by physically degrading the myelin sheath, that crucial insulation. This leads to measurable functional impairment of nerve signaling. We saw this with the EM images, the conduction studies, and the correlation between injury markers and myelin damage in patients.
Got it. Direct nerve damage by cancer. Takeaway two.
Second, the injured neurons don't just sit there. They actively respond by initiating an inflammatory cascade. Crucially, they themselves start pumping out cytokines like IL-6 and driving type I interferon signaling. They become active immune modulators. This was shown clearly in those co-culture experiments where the signals came directly from the neurons.
Okay, injured nerves actively signal inflammation. And the third takeaway.
And third, this specific nerve-driven inflammation reshapes the tumor microenvironment into an immunosuppressive landscape. You get more bad macrophages, more exhausted T cells, and this whole suppressive environment ultimately leads to resistance against anti-PD-1 immunotherapy. The reversal experiments, denervation improving outcomes, axotomy worsening them, blocking ATF3 or IFNI or IL-6 helping really sealed this causal link.
So damage, signal, suppression, resistance, a clear, albeit complex, pathway. This deep dive into the work by Baruch and colleagues truly reveals the nervous system not just as a bystander, but as this active, dynamic player in the complex fight between cancer and our own immune system. It really makes you wonder, doesn't it? What other silent partners might be hiding in the complex biology of disease, just waiting for us to uncover their unexpected and perhaps critical influence. Thank you for joining us on Science TLDR.